You're on 98.7, Your Story Counts with Simone and Nan. Good morning.
Good morning, Simone. It's good to be here today.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We're so excited because we have the gorgeous and talented Monique Rhodes joining us this morning.
Yeah, and she's going to talk to us from LA.
I know.
That is so rock star, isn't it? Hey?
I know. It's so exciting.
Yeah, she's a bit of a New Zealand local girl, but, you know, she's been so kind to give us a good hour of her time today.
Yeah, she's a very good friend of mine, and I'm so excited to be talking to her today.
So we want to get started with one of her very special songs, which is Forever Strong. And this song is a very heartfelt song, and it's all about children and violence towards children, which was a real problem in New Zealand, back 7 years ago, where she felt this drive and this passion to really support Plunkett, which was actually a charity, that goes in and helps families when there's domestic violence. So, you know, what an amazing woman. She flew back from, France and dedicated a number of years to getting this this Christmas, CD together.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So every single talented celebrity actually wrote their own song. Mm. And this was her song that she wrote for this album.
You're on 98.7, Your Story Counts with Simone and Nan. And that was Forever Strong. Wasn't that a beautiful song? And on the line we have the gorgeous, talented Monique Rhodes. How are you, Monique?
I'm really well. How are you both?
Good, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, hot, sunny day here in Los Angeles.
Oh, fantastic.
Monique, so, it's great to have you on today. We were just making sure that everything's beautifully in balance for you so that we can have a good old natter over the show today. So we just played your song Forever Strong.
Mm. Nice. I love that song. It was a very, very special time making that album, actually.
Yeah, we sort of did a bit of an intro and we explained a little bit about it was for an album called A Merry Christmas Baby.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm originally from New Zealand and we have quite an issue in New Zealand with violence against children. Nobody really seems to understand why. So that album was put together with some of the biggest names in New Zealand music, basically to help raise money for fighting child abuse. So, yeah, it was a year-long project for me, and it was a real heart project. And it was great just connecting with, so many of my friends in the music industry in New Zealand because I was out of the country for many, many years and just, bringing the biggest names together and, making this really beautiful album for Christmas time.
Yeah, they were, they sounded so supportive of the album. Was it easy to get them all together?
Yeah, I mean, very easy because, there's a number of them I know really well. And as soon as they said yes, it was kind of a situation where other people started calling and saying, we've heard about this album, can we get on it? So that was really, really nice. And it was a huge amount of work and a massive project. But, working with such phenomenal artists for the year was very, very special, and very special for them as well to, be part of it.
Well, that's fantastic. And what was it like for you growing up in New Zealand?
Well, New Zealand's a very, very beautiful country, but it's also very small. And, life in New Zealand was great, very nature-based, very kind of outdoors-based. I sort of feel sometimes now it's more like I appreciate it more
as you
the
get
longer
older.
I've been away from it. Mm. Yeah, and I love going home. I love being there. It's a very, I guess it's quite an open, accepting society. We were the first country in the world to give women the vote. We're very progressive with gay rights, where unfortunately Australia isn't. So there's lots of things that I feel that, we're, it's a pretty accepting culture and very, very friendly and warm. I mean, every culture has its underbelly. And as I've said, we have a big problem with, child abuse, and we have a big problem with youth suicide as well. So, there's the shadow side to everywhere, I guess. And unfortunately, New Zealand has its share of things that are are challenges for us as a country.
So did the album make a difference for Plunkett? I heard it got to platinum level, so was there something they were able to really do with that kind of support?
Yeah, I think more than anything, just giving that profile, you know, like when you have a whole bunch of people behind a project who are household names saying this is really important to us, then obviously that's incredibly helpful for any organisation you're doing that for, because it just raises the profile and also helps to continue that conversation that we keep having in New Zealand as to what are the causes of this and, you know, what are we doing wrong? And there's no clear answers at this point, but, you know, I think that conversation just is vital that we keep having it so that we can look after everybody in our community, but particularly, you know, our kids.
And the children can feel safe to speak up and speak out about what's happening for them.
Yeah, without a doubt, absolutely. And in those years, you know, there's been a law change in New Zealand where parents aren't allowed to hit their kids anymore. So, you know, there's still some disagreement about this law passing. But if you look at most first world countries in the world, I think a lot of them, you know, you're not allowed to smack your kids. And I thought it was really great that New Zealand passed that law. And I think that the reason for that is I think there's a kind of lot of kids on the borderline where maybe if it is illegal to smack your kids, then the parents who, you know, might be on the borderline of kind of abuse might end up, you know, feeling that they can't kind of do that sort of thing. And the children are able to say to their parents, you know, that this is illegal, and there are now avenues for them to go down to make authorities aware. I don't know if it works or not, but I think it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Well, we have to try, don't we? And that's the thing, is it's not okay just to sit by and think that those sort of stats are, you know, something we're
acceptable.
All comfortable with.
Mm.
And that's what I love about you, is you said, you know, look, I'm just one person, and you know what, I've got to do something. And that's what you did.
Yeah.
And that was a big something.
I think that is, you know, we all make our choices in life, and we all make decisions as to where we put our energy. And for me, you know, it's you know, when you have the, I guess, the skills and the ability to create projects like this, it's just really such a wonderful thing to feel that as one person, you know, you get an idea in your head one day, and then to see the whole thing come to fruition and you know, to get so much press. And, you know, I was very fortunate to also be nominated that year for New Zealander of the Year. So there was a massive kind of thing to go from nothing to that. And I think that, you know, if nothing else, you know, I think it's really good to look at the skill set that you have. And if you have the skill set and you can see a way that you might be able to make positive change, then I'm just encouraging of people doing it. You know, it's really never underestimate what is possible. I think we have a tendency to think that there's all sorts of obstacles and blocks, and there always is, but if we really, you know, put our focus on the end goal and what we want it to look like and just keep going, you know, you can really get there. So, yeah.
So when did you discover that you had this beautiful gift and could sing and could play the guitar? When did you pick up the guitar, you know?
Actually, very funny. When I was a kid, my parents gave me the option of any instrument that I wanted to play, and I decided to learn the violin. So I went along to these kind of Saturday morning music classes, and they were group classes. And within a few weeks of being at these group classes, the teacher rang my mother and said, "Oh, Monique's too talented. She's progressing too quickly, so she probably needs to go to private lessons."
Wow. Yep.
My mother was thrilled. She thought this was marvelous, you know. So she found a teacher who was quite close to where we lived and happened to be one of the top violin teachers in the city I grew up in New Zealand. So this woman, you know, only had a few students, and she said that because of this, I would need to be auditioned. So I went along this particular day and, you know, had this audition with this beautiful lady, and it was all going really well. I had to play a little bit of my violin and do a little bit of sight reading, and I mean, I'm sure at that point my ability was incredibly basic. And then she got on the piano and she played some notes and she asked me to sing them. And I'll never forget the atmosphere in the room just totally changing. And I didn't know what was wrong. I had no idea, but I knew there was something wrong. And so then she said to me, look, can you sing a song from school? So I sang a song from school, and I could see there was, again, a serious problem. And when she was finished, she turned to my mother and she said to her, well, I can see she's very talented, but I'm going to put her on trial because I've never in my life heard a child sing so out of tune.
Oh, that sounds like my story.
I think I was actually tone deaf. And so the joke was that I was taught by her from the age of 5 until I was 18, and I used to tease her about every year was I still on trial, you know? So, and it was very cool. I ended up, you know, becoming a star pupil, and it was really sweet. She was a very, very important person to me. But most of all, she taught me how to hear and tune, because when you play the violin, the notes aren't automatically created for you. You have to place your finger in the absolute precise place on my strings on the violin. And so she had to teach me. It was a very long, many years process to teach me how to hear and tune, which then gave me the ability to be able to sing and tune.
So does that mean that there's hope for all of us?
There's absolutely hope for everybody, I promise you. When I was younger, my only hope with singing was to be able to get in a car with a group of my friends and be able to sing to the radio without being embarrassed. I mean, that's how badly I sang.
And look at you now. What a superstar you are now. All that hard work's paid off, Monique.
My friends find it very hilarious as to what I do with my life.
Let's have a listen, hey, because we've got another one of your tracks sitting right here. And we thought we would play Inside Your Heart from your album Awakening. Right. Yeah, so let's have a listen to this tone-deaf kid as she really, shows us what she can do, because it's absolutely magical. So I'm going to play it now. So here we go.
So Monique, you had boot camp of music, and then what happened after that when you were about 18? What did you decide to do from there?
I decided to leave university and become a musician.
Fantastic.
I'd been writing songs from when I was about 12 years old, and I put together a band with there was four of us all together, and that was my first band, and we called ourselves the Sisterhoods, which was pretty hilarious, and because we were an all-female band. And our very, very first gig was at the biggest venue in the city that I grew up in, and it was a really big deal. And the drummer in my band was actually worked at Student Radio. She was the manager at Student Radio. And so somehow we got on this billing for this multi-band event, and it was our first gig ever. And, so we did it at this massive venue. And I remember thinking that we were so awesome, but I'm pretty sure we were probably quite terrible, to be honest.
So what did you play? Did you play guitar or did you play piano or violin?
No, I was a guitarist and a singer.
And
so there
singer,
were three of,
course.
Of us in the band that sang. We had two guitarists and a bass player, and all three of us sang and wrote. So we kind of went, you know, in between the three of us as to who was taking the lead vocal on which particular song.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds like so much fun. I think we all wanted to be rock star back then. But you
That's
did.
Right.
You
it
became
was so
that.
Much fun. It was so much fun. And I just remember thinking the buzz was so good that it was like, oh, this is what I want to do.
Oh, I can. So imagine. Do you think you'll ever bring back the sisterhood?
No, I doubt it. I do see some of them occasionally, and it's so wonderful to see them. But I can't imagine there would be a revival of us.
Well, you've sort of gone to a different place now, haven't you, with your music?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure my drummer would be thrilled at the level I would require her to be at.
Hey, I'm really curious. So what are you doing now other than, you know, obviously travelling around the world, you know, living the dream? But what's your real focus at the moment?
Well, you know, for most of my life I've done music and I've performed all over the world and, I've done amazing stuff like, you know, I toured with Chuck Berry through Europe a couple of times and I worked with Peter Gabriel's band at one point and I've performed at all sorts of things. I did some work at one point for the producer of the film The Secret. That was really special.
Yeah.
I created an album called Heartbeats. And Heartbeats was an album basically that was focusing on, I guess, some of the spiritual teachers in the world and kind of their message and trying to bring it in a way that people could, I don't know, relate to. And so I composed chill-out music behind their spoken word. And, you know, for many years, this has been of interest to me because I've been a student of Tibetan Buddhism now for 15 years. And I think we're kind of in a place in the world right now where, you know, we need philosophies or skill sets to help us survive in a world that's becoming increasingly difficult for most people. And despite it being seen, you know, Tibetan Buddhism or Buddhism, you know, being seen as a religion, we don't see it as a religion. We see it as a science of the mind and a way to basically help cope in the world. So one of the most important things that you learn in Buddhism is that your happiness isn't based on external circumstances. It's basically based on what happens with your mind.
Mm.
So that whole thing of it's not what happens to you, it's how you react to it.
Yep.
So the belief that the more that you can train your mind, then the more you're able to have a different experience of the world. So one of the most fundamental principles of that is to work with your mind and train it through meditation, which is, you know, just the same as putting your mind through the gym every day. So I've been, you know, studying this for a long time and it had a huge effect on me and I was fortunate enough to be doing a project for His Holiness the Dalai Lama and I was living in India doing a music project along the same lines as the Heartbeats album.
Mm.
And there were a lot of young people there asking me if I would teach them to meditate and I was absolutely reticent to do it. But one day these two girls came and said, look, please, can we come tomorrow and just hang out with you while you meditate? And I sort of reluctantly said yes.
Mm.
And then what happened was that over time, you know, we started with two and I sort of ended up with 30 people a day coming to learn. And,
wow.
Yep. And then they sort of said to me, look, you know, can you give us something for when we're not with you? So after much, you know, sort of saying, please, would you, I decided to create an online program called The 10-Minute Mind. That's a 10. If you're looking it up, it's the 10-Minute Mind with a 10.com. And basically that's a program to teach you, you know, how to meditate, teach you mindfulness meditation. And it's in a number of universities around the world. It's in a number of businesses. And there's actually thousands of people at the moment all over the world using it. So, yeah, that's kind of where things are at the moment. It's a big focus and a big passion and a big love to help teach people how to work with themselves in a different way.
That's fabulous. In fact, we've got here another one of your wonderful, like you say, it's a meditation song, which is Spaciousness from Heartbeats. And last night I had, you know, as a mum and working and organising radio shows, my mind was flying around last night and I did play this and I found myself relaxing and falling asleep, you know, beautifully. So it does work.
Great, wonderful.
So,
this track is actually from the Heartbeats album. So this track is obviously not a meditation track, but it's one of the great Tibetan Buddhist lamas talking about, you know, how you have to, you know, work with your mind in a spacious way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's absolutely beautiful. Well, let's have a listen now. Let's put it on. And everyone out there can enjoy just a moment to themselves. So here we go.
You're on 98.7 Your Story Counts with Simone and Annette, and we have all the way from LA, the gorgeous, talented Monique Rhodes. Tell us more about the 10-minute meditation, because I think that is just a fantastic concept, and I think it's so important for people to be able to use on a daily basis.
Well, I guess the main thing with, you know, learning, you know, how to meditate on a daily basis is it just really changes your life.
Mm.
So one of the ways that it does that is you start to become less reactive. You feel much more positive. You're much more energized. Your mind isn't so out of control. You have better relationships with people because you start to become calmer and more grounded. And, you know, there's so much scientific research that shows, you know, all of the physical benefits of meditation as well. But for me, the emotional changes are the thing that's, you know, the most exciting and the thing that everyday people can see the best of all. I think that we're living in a world right now where there's so much stress and anxiety and depression that it's kind of vital for us to take seriously looking after our mind and to take seriously, you know, taking care of ourselves in a holistic way, not just exercising, but also, yeah, working with the things that we put into our brain on a daily basis.
I agree, because we tend to look at health and well-being from the neck down, and I think for 10 minutes a day, and wouldn't it be fantastic to be able to get this into schools and for kids instead of having a recess, you know, and that, yes, they can go out and play afterwards, but, you know, to be able to have that 10-minute, you know, all together and just listening to that would be just so powerful, and it would just reduce a lot of these.
Yeah, kids are really responsive to it as well, you know, and I think one of the struggles that we're up against is that, you know, technology is so mind-blowing and has advanced so much in my lifetime. And, you know, I'm the first to put up my hand and say that because of technology, there are so many things that are available to me. And, you know, I love the advent of technology and the changes that have happened. But once again, you know, as with everything, there's a shadow side to things. And we're now living, you know, in a society where kids who are 18, around that age, for example, you know, have had 10 years, over half of their life, with the iPhone technology, because it's only 10 years since the iPhone, you know, was invented. And so, you know, it's not just kids, because, but I think the thing is that we can remember what it used to be like before we constantly reached for this device to distract us. And I think that we're now in a world where, I mean, you just have to observe how people are when they're on the trains, how people are when they're in a restaurant and they're by themselves or waiting for something.
They're on their phone.
The societal norm has changed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just will pick up their phone rather than just being able to sit and be with themselves.
Yeah, connect with themselves.
I think what we're losing. Yeah, I think we're losing an ability to be comfortable in our own skin and be comfortable just sitting and having quiet time with ourselves. And I think that that's problematic. And it means that, you know, for young people especially, there's this kind of culture they've grown up in of instant distraction, instant gratification. And, you know, I think that it's adding to the mental health issues that are, you know, we're facing on a worldwide scale, and they're quite dramatic, the changes that are happening on a worldwide scale with depression and anxiety and stress.
We actually,
you know, my program's at a number of, you know, universities around the world, and we first trialled it at UCL, which is the University College of London, which is the seventh top university in the world, and it's a stunning university. And the levels of stress and anxiety that they're seeing at UCL are unprecedented. But I'm finding that with all of the universities I talk to around the world, they're having the same thing. So many universities are now bringing my program in to help support their students because they need, you know, they need to learn on a very basic level just how to work with their mind and how to just stop, even if it's only for 10 minutes and the day and be with themselves.
Now, someone, I guess, that would have really benefited, I guess, you know, in their life from some mindfulness, and they are the kids who are brought up in very difficult family environments, where they sort of, you know, are channeled into a challenging life, and find themselves on the wrong side of the law. We have a song here called Dear Michael. Can you tell us a little bit about that song?
Sure. So when I first started to study Buddhism, one of the things that Buddhism teaches you is that there's goodness in every single person. And I guess at times that's hard to even imagine, that there is goodness in every single person. And I got very interested in inmates on death row in America because I'd written another song on my album To the Moon and Back, which was about a death row inmate who had been involved in a shooting at the age of 19. With a gang of boys, and they killed someone, and at the age of 41, he was executed. And I found his story deeply moving, and I decided that, as well as the song, which ended up, you know, finding its way all over the world, because there was a group of people that were his pen pals, including Sister Helen Prejean, whose Dead Man Walking was written about, and one day I came home because the song had got out everywhere. I was living in Sydney and there was a card in the mail from America, and I was like, I don't even know who this is from in New York. And it was a handwritten letter from Susan Sarandon, who was friends with this guy, and she had written thanking me for the song about
the
guy that To the Moon and Back is about. Yeah, so it was really special, and I could see that there were all these people that were pen pals to this guy, and they held him and supported him and loved him. So I decided to apply for a pen pal program in America, and I was given a man called Michael.
Yeah.
And for 13 years, we have written to each other, and I've been and visited him many times. And, Dear Michael is about my relationship with him and just offering friendship to someone who everybody has forgotten.
Wow. Okay, well, let's have a listen to this one. This is Dear Michael from your album Awakening.
Dear Michael, you're on 98.7 Your Story Counts with Simone and Nan, and we have Monique Rhodes from LA, and that was her beautiful song.
That was such a lovely song. I could listen to that over and over again. It was just fabulous. Now, we've just so enjoyed our time with you. You are certainly one of the special ladies of the world, and we would love to follow you more. What's next? What's next for you? How can we see you? How can we follow you? What's the plan?
Sure. Well, you know, there's a couple of ways. First of all, you can come on Facebook and find the 10-Minute Mind on there and, you know, keep up to date with what's happening. But also, you know, we're actually just about to take it off, but I'll make sure it's still on for these next few days. You can get a free trial, a 10-day trial of the 10-Minute Mind.
Wow.
So,
fabulous. Okay.
You know, everyone come and try that. And actually, maybe you can, on your podcast notes, you know, because that's about to change, maybe we can do something special for your listeners, and we'll create a special page that you can still get that free 10-day trial because it's about to come down. So we'll set that up for you.
That's fantastic. And what's next for you?
So, well, what's next really at the moment is getting things, you know, getting the program in more universities around the world, which is why I'm here in LA at the moment, because the program's at a number of universities in New York. I'm still doing private concerts, so if anyone's interested in a private concert, then you can, you know, easily get hold of me through my website, The 10-Minute Mind, or through MoniqueRhodes.com.
And I can personally say that is an awesome thing to do, because I've experienced being at one of your personal concerts, and they're amazing.
Great, you have. It was very special.
So
that's really the focus, you know.
Okay, fabulous.
Just getting all that out and about, and, you know, just to encourage people to be aware of looking after themselves in a really holistic way, and also to remind them, you know, never to be shy about what they can do to make a positive change in the world.
That's what we're all about.
What a fantastic message.
Absolutely. And you know what? Next time you zip into Melbourne, you make sure that you pop past RPP and come and have a cup of coffee with us, hey?
Oh, I totally will. I'm actually going to be there. It'll be either October or November.
Oh, fantastic. Right. Well, we're booking you in.
Yeah.
And we'll take you to Oasis Bakery and we'll show you they've got great donuts over there.
Love it. Better than America.
I bet. Well, thank you so much for your time.
All right. We'll be talking to you in October. Thank you again. It's been wonderful chatting to you.
It'll be great seeing you very shortly.